Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. Today on the show, we'll talk about some news in the world of Houston restaurants, as well as our meal at a new restaurant you may want to try. To do that, I am joined by my co-host this week. She is the owner of Heights Grocer and Montrose Grocer. Mary Clarkson, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm great, Eric. Happy to be here with you today.
Thank you for doing this. Let us dive right into the news of the week. Topic number one, 12 Houston restaurants were named semifinalists for the 2026 James Beard Awards. Let's give them their flowers very quickly. And Tracy Vaught of H-Town Restaurant Group for Outstanding Restaurateur. Manabu Horiuchi of Katami for Outstanding Chef. Max Lapp and Jacques Veron of Basso for Emerging Chef. Adrian Torres of Maximo for Emerging Chef. Agnes and Sherman for Best New Restaurant, Lee's for Best New Bar, June Rodill of March for Outstanding Professional in Beverage Service, Christine Wynn of Bluedorn for Outstanding Professional in Cocktail Service, and four nominees for Best Chef Texas. They are Ope Amosu of Chop and Block, Kent Domas and Seth Siegel Gardner for Milton's, Evelyn Garcia and Henry Liu for June, and Sean Gall for Camaraderie. Mary, that's a mouthful, but you know, I got a text message from a mutual friend of ours who said, you know, give me the dirt, give me the skinny, like who are the snubs? And I went, I don't know, this feels pretty right to me. Like these are 12 experienced professionals who are doing outstanding work at their individual Houston restaurants.
I'm really pleased with the list, to be honest. You know, I think some obvious choices were included in there, and I think some, you know, kind of surprising choices were in there, but ones that were well-deserved. I'm really excited to see, you know, Basso, of course, and Maximo. Agnes and Sherman are some of my favorites. Obviously, Hugo and Tracy deserve a lot of credit here. They're longtime Houston operators and really beloved. And I'm excited, you know, for Hori as well on here. I think there's a lot of amazing talent here. Christine, I was at Blue Door last week, and it's always so great to see her. She really does some of the best cocktails in the city, and such friendly and warm hospitality. It's always really lovely to see.
Right. I count Christine as kind of a pleasant surprise. I mean, she's well respected in Houston. She's won the Tastemaker Award for Bartender of the Year. She's bounced around a little bit. You know, she was at Bad News for a long time. She was at Nancy Sussel for a long time. She opened Camaraderie, and now she's at Bluedorn. But she is really like someone who, if you're into cocktails in Houston, you know her. And to see her get a little national love, I think is really exciting. In terms of the restaurants, you know how I feel about Milton's, right? It's one of my absolute favorites. And
so good.
And to see, you know, an Italian-American restaurant get nominated, you know, we keep sort of talking every time we talk about the James Beard Awards, we talk about how the awards since 2022 are different than they were prior to 2020 when they changed the judging criteria and changed to who the judges are and what the rules are and all that stuff. And it got pretty casual in some ways, right? Like that, you know, there was this very deliberate shift away from fine dining for the most part, and the kinds of restaurants that we were recognizing. And, you know, and that was awesome in some ways, right? Because it meant that Street to Kitchen and Chef G could get a James Beard Award for a restaurant that was located in the parking lot of a gas station. And in the old days, that never would have been possible. But it also felt like, but it also felt like some people who were doing, you know, more traditional fine dining or European cuisine, like weren't getting recognized because that wasn't what the committee was looking for. But now we've kind of swung back a little bit. So you can get, you know, Agnes and Sherman, this very casual, kind of quirky Asian American diner. You can get Lee's, which is a friendly, welcoming cocktail bar, or Maximo, a teeny tiny little upscale Mexican restaurant in West U. But you can also get Milton's, you know, the Italian American restaurant. You can get Sean Gall doing kind of French influenced fare at Camaraderie. You can get Hori doing, you know, very, very precise, very expensive sushi at Katami. I really like that that the pendulum has swung back a little bit, that we can do both.
Yeah, I think, you know, high-low has always been one of the things that I love most about Houston dining. You can go to a really fancy multi-course tasting restaurant if that's what you're in the mood for, but you can also go to a really casual spot and have a great meal. And for me, you know, places like having Maximo on there, that's such a delight to see them get some award, you know, press and awards that they deserve. I know Milton's obviously is one of your and my favorites, but, you know, I think good food doesn't have to be super expensive. If you want to spend a lot of money in this town, you can, but I think it's really important to have a wide array of dining options, and this reflects that.
Right. I mean, Chop and Block, you know, the entrees are in the, you know, upper teens, low 20s, right? You can have,
sure.
You can go, two people can go to Chop and Block and eat for, you know, $60 to $75. And that's with one of their very excellent cocktails and a couple of appetizers or dessert. I mean, you know, that kind of affordability is great. And Lee's is kind of the same way, right? The drinks are, you know, $15. They've got a super casual food menu with, you know, the chicken parm sandwich and the wings. And now they've got pizza and some, you know, they just rolled out a $25 steak night. So again, like two drinks each and some sort of food, and you're still right around $100. I mean, that's very appealing. But, you know, if you want to spend $500 on dinner for two, like Katami, Basso, like that's all available for you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. You want to take a shot? You want to pick any one or two of these that you think are going to advance to the finalist stage?
Ooh, okay, sure. I'll pick a couple. I'm like, why?
Yeah,
not?
We don't have to go yes, no on all of them. I just,
no, you know. I think I'll just go with like the ones I'm most excited about, maybe per se. Let's see. I'm going to go with Emerging Chef for Max and Jacques for Basso. I think you and I both love this restaurant, but we're not alone. It's a super popular restaurant, serving really innovative food. It's not like anything else in town. I think that's what draws me to this place the most. And, you know, it's an open kitchen concept. You can see them cooking in live fire in front of you. I think that's fun. I'm excited for them. I hope they get in there. And also Best New Restaurant, Agnes and Sherman. I mean, they also, both of these concepts are doing something other people are not. And I haven't seen anything quite like it. So I think these two kind of stand apart for me personally.
No, I think those are two good choices. The two others that stood out to me, June Rodil for March. June is so well known, being a master sommelier, a female master sommelier, a female master sommelier who's an immigrant. I mean, she's always been a real unicorn. She has a ton of relationships in the wine world, and I think people will be excited to support her. And then the one other one is, we are living in a Chop and Block world right now.
100%. You know,
it's been in the New York Times, Michelin Bib Gourmand. I mean, it's just that restaurant is riding so high right now. I think Ope has a strong shot at being one of the five finalists for Best Chef Texas.
I agree. I think that's a good one. I left that one to you because I knew you were going to talk about it. So well chosen.
All right, let's move on to topic number two. We're all still a little bit sad about the closure of Polly's, the Italian restaurant in Montrose. But there is good news for fans of the cookies, the iced shortbread cookies that Polly's made. They have been revived by Zoe Guerrero, the 22-year-old baker who was the last cookie manager for Polly's. She is making them under her own name, so they are now Zoe's cookies. But I talked to Zoe. They are absolutely, it's the same recipe. It's the same cookie cutters. It's the same process. They are the Polly's cookies, but they are now Zoe's cookies. So Mary, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but just on a scale of 1 to 10, how happy are you to have Polly's cookies back in our lives?
Listen, I am super excited, so much so that I messaged her on Instagram and I was like, if you would like your cookies carried at Montrose Grocer, please let me know. So, I mean,
yes, that's such a good idea.
Right? I'm like, let's do a collab here, can we? My mom,
at least do a pop-up, right? Like come bring the cookies to Montrose
totally,
for one day only. She'd sell them out in an hour.
I know. Like, can I do
have
this
a line
for,
out the door?
Can I do this for Valentine's Day? Like, seriously. So
oh my God, that's such a no-brainer.
I'm like, Zoe, if you hear this, please contact me.
I'll give you her phone number. I'll connect you to you. I want this to happen so bad.
Right? I'm excited. Me too. So, you know, growing up, mom always brought me these cookies for special occasions, right? Holidays, birthdays, sporting team events, all of that. So I think so many people are nostalgic about, obviously, Polly's being gone, and this is one way that they can kind of honor that and still have something that reminds them of that. And I think it's wonderful that she's able to carry this forward. And like, I love this. This is the definition of small businesses, and I'm excited to support her no matter what.
Yeah, no, I think this is like one of those stories that's purely just good news.
Yeah, it makes you happy, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's sweet.
Yeah, because I saw this happen on Instagram. We traded a couple messages. I talked to her. You know, just these cookies, as you said, they've been such a part of people's family celebrations or companies that give them out as Christmas presents or whatever. And they just sort of went away with no plan. Just was so disappointing. So to know that they're still available, and yeah, it's a little harder to get them now because, you know, she's set up at a workshop near her home in North Houston, and you got to go get them and you got to order them in advance. You can't just like, it's not as simple as just popping over to Polly's for a couple of cookies, you know, taking a half dozen home with you. But so it requires a little more intent, but she's not putting in a minimum order. So if you just want, you know, a half a dozen cookies or a dozen cookies, she's ready to take that on for you. And so I'm just so excited that this is happening. And I even traded a couple messages with Paul Petronella, the former owner of Polly's, and he just said absolutely wonderful things about Zoe. So, you know, for him to kind of trust this legacy onto her, I think really says a lot about how talented she is and how organized she is.
I agree. Excited for her and can't wait to have some of her cookies.
And then let's just do topic number three. The group behind Barre Ristorante and Georgie James has claimed the former Verde Garden space in the Harlow District for a new pan-Latin restaurant they're calling Exilio Latin Flair. It will serve dishes inspired by the cuisines of Central America, Latin America, South America, Mexico, and Spain. Mary, do you have any expectations for Exilio Latin Flair?
You know, I don't really. The space, you know, I've been to Verde Garden before. It's a cool spot to have a beer or watch a game. And, you know, it's so big is the only thing I'll say, both the indoor and outdoor area. And there's multiple rooms. And I know the rent here is incredibly expensive. It's not like it's their first rodeo. Barre, obviously, in River Oaks District is a high rent area. And I'm sure Georgia James is as well, the former Georgia James space that they took over and continue to operate. So, you know, I don't think they're scared of a space this size, and my hat's off to them. This is literally the opposite of anything I would ever do. I like tiny businesses, obviously. But I think they can make a change that might work really well between Katami and La Grilla. I just think not everybody wants to valet if it's going to be a casual spot. So if it's high end, I think people are okay with that. I mean, you really have to valet here. There's not much street parking. So you're valeting, you're Ubering. I think they'll do well here. It's just, can you get enough people in here to cover your overhead? And that is a question I do not know the answer to.
Right. I think that they have shown both at Bari and at Georgia James that they can get people's attention, right? Like, sure. I don't personally love the ways that they sort of rounded off the quirks that made Georgia James exciting to me, but I respect that Georgia James is a much busier, more successful restaurant in this iteration than it was during previously. Its time with Underbelly Hospitality. So, and Bari is not one of my favorite Italian restaurants, but I recognize that it is a busy place that gets a lot of that same CNBC crowd that makes, that flocks to Toulouse, right? You kind of, are you feeling Frenchy? You go hang out on the patio at Toulouse. Are you feeling more Italian-y? You hang out on the patio at Bari. And I think that they obviously take great care of people. They've been able to execute consistently. And so I think like this is the right kind of business to complement La Gruyère and Katami, because there's no overlap in terms of the cuisine. It will be another, as you said, upscale kind of restaurant that will draw the same kind of diners. And so then people will have that choice to make. Oh, do I want sushi tonight? Cool. Katami, do I want paella or empanadas or, Argentinian steaks? Cool. We'll go to Exilio. Do I want pasta and the crazy pizza bread? Like La Gruyère's there for you. So, I don't know that this is going to be like, a restaurant that I personally go to a lot, but I do have this feeling that it will fit in well with its neighbors and be pretty busy, especially when it opens. I think there's going to be considerable excitement around it when it opens.
I think so too. They've managed to find a following, and while it may not be something that you and I frequent, it's still definitely a valid operator and a busy one at that, certainly in River Oaks District.
Yeah, I respect it as a business, even if I'm not like personally excited about it as a dining destination, right? Like, and we talk about this all the time. Whether or not I personally like something is not really that. I mean, like sometimes it's relevant, right? But
sure,
when we're assessing the business case for this restaurant, like, give them credit for what they've accomplished, and I'm optimistic about their prospects.
I agree. Same here.
All right. Mary, I'm going to say that does it for the news of the week. We'll be right back with our restaurants of the week. Stick around. Mary, for our restaurant of the week, I want to talk to you about Saranda. This is the new restaurant from Hugo Ortega and Tracy Vaught, or as I should say, James Beard Award semifinalists, Hugo Ortega and Tracy Vaught. This is their California-inspired restaurant in the Norton Rose Fulbright Tower. It is right next to Discovery Green. We went for brunch a few weeks ago, and I'm going to say we had a pretty good meal at Saranda. So why don't you start with kind of your first impressions? What did you think of the design and the location?
I think the design is really beautiful. It's lots of light colored blonde hardwoods and lots of light overlooking Discovery Green. So you can see, you're overlooking a really pretty part of downtown. And I know there's not always a lot of pretty parts of downtown, so that's nice. I think it being in the Fulbright Tower is a smart business decision. You've got a bunch of attorneys in the building and a whole bunch of other people that I'm sure are going to get catering orders here, do lunches here, dinners, and lots of entertaining. It's a big space. They had a private dining room, which I thought was obviously very smart given where they're located and World Cup coming up. I'm sure they'll be busy with that as well. But I love their food in general. I like all of their concepts, but this one stood out to me for how light and bright the food is. I mean,
Let me come back to the food, because I just want to sort of I want to build on your comments about the space.
Sure.
You can see what, you know, Tracy and Hugo were on the podcast a couple months ago and they talked about this, and you can see why it appealed to Tracy, right? Those really tall windows. It's right next to Discovery Green. They've done very well, you know, just on the other side of the park with Sochi. And that idea of being able to capture all of those people that come into, you know, Discovery Green and the George R. Brown Convention Center every weekend, all the business travelers that go through there every week. And as you said, it is a large space, and you know, they've got that private dining room right by the entrance, but then there's like a whole mezzanine seating area that's available for larger private events. And so I do think they've done a really nice job. It feels kind of coastal. It feels kind of California without feeling, you know, without having to put like, you know, a fish tank in or animals on the walls or anything like that.
I agree.
Now I'll turn you loose. Talk about what some of your favorite dishes from our meal that day.
Set me free. Here I go. Okay. A lot of restaurants do charbroiled oysters, that kind of thing. These are the best I have ever had. Really, really beautiful sauce on them, lightly breaded, really, really, really savory, delicious, not overly filling. I feel like a lot of time charbroiled oysters are heavy or weighed down. Not the case with this. Cocktails were, you know, what you would expect from Hugo and Tracy, but also a little twist. You know, you can get your classic margaritas, mezcal margaritas, but they also had a very generous portion of cocktails dedicated to this Baja-style cuisine. The food overall, lots of seafood. You and I had hamachi. We also had the fish that they're known for with their sauces, mole, which was delicious. Every single dish we had here, in my opinion, hit. And I don't think all of their restaurants do that for me. I think there's always great dishes in each of their restaurants, but this was a really cohesive concept.
No, I think that's all well said. And, you know, just to kind of build on what you said about the roasted oysters, obviously they started this at Caracol, right? With those chipotle oysters. And then they did a variation at Sochi, a different flavor of roasted oysters. And these are gochujang with furikake and a little bit of panko. And it's just so smart because, you know, they're really taking this California thing and the cuisines that have come to California, especially from Asia, and just having some fun with it. And this is kind of one of the clearer, you know, fusion-y kind of dishes that they're doing. And they are so delicious. I was back at Zaranda last week and I had a couple more of those. And I just like, you know, I could eat a dozen. And I'm with you, right? A dozen oysters Rockefeller and you'd be like ready for a nap. But as you said, these are a little lighter. The spice is good. Just everything about them is so delicious. And then, yeah, we had that aguachile, you know, and then, you know, we were there for brunch and they don't do, right? It's Zaranda is named after the wire basket that they cook some of the seafood items in. And that's not typically available at brunch, but they were very kind to accommodate us. And so we had a really delicious snapper and some really delicious shrimp that are just simply grilled in that basket. And they get sauced with, like you said, the mole or the, you know, the spice rub or whatever it is that they're doing. And it's just tasty. I mean, they're well cooked. You know, the fish was moist. The shrimp were plump and juicy. I mean, it's all good things. And it's kind of a reminder, right? I don't get to Hugo's restaurants as often as maybe I once did. But, you know, he's still one of Houston's like most accomplished chefs. And given a little inspiration, right? Like given, all right, he's going to put himself in this box of California and try to work within the Mexican part of California and the American part of California and the immigrants who have come to California over the last, you know, 150 years and how they've shaped its cuisine. I mean, it's so smart and so well executed. It's like, oh yeah. We keep talking about, you know, the theme of, 2025 was the old guys still got it, right? Like Brian Caswell at Latuli and, you know, Ryan Lachane going from Real to State of Grace. Well, you know, add Hugo to that list, right? Because he's very much still got it at Zaranda.
I love it when I see that. I love it when chefs open a new concept and you can really see what they've been working on, what's been cooking, and to show, like everybody has a little ego in this business. It's healthy too, maybe not too much, but just to test your skills and know that you can do something outside of the box that most people have put you in is a really refreshing thing to see. So this place is going to do well. You can just feel it. The food is excellent. And you can see all of the years of them operating restaurants come into play here. And both the design, service, food, and beverage program, all very strong.
No, absolutely. And frankly, if I had to choose, I think I would choose this over Sochi. Not that I think Sochi is bad, just that I find this menu so exciting and there's so many things still to try that I would go back quickly.
I agree. Same here. This honestly, Hugo's is very convenient for me, obviously, having a business and living nearby to Hugo's, but I think this is worth a trip downtown. And I think that's an interesting point to make too. It's like, is this restaurant worth you going out of your way for, right? Because downtown is kind of a hassle to get to. So if you don't work down there, you are making an effort to go down there. And I think it's incredible. So it's very excited for them.
Well, there you go. I'd say that's a good place to wrap it up. Mary Clarkson, that does it for our restaurant of the week. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's it for today's show. Thank you so much for listening. Join me on Thursday when my guests will be Shiva and Rick DeVriglio from Da Gama and Oporto.